Welcome. You're listening to a podcast by Tohu Magazine, an online art magazine published in three languages, Hebrew, Arabic, and English. Please enjoy this recording, and if you'd like to know more about our magazine, give us a visit at tohumagazine.com.
Hello, all Tohu readers and listeners. I'm David Dufshani, and in this podcast, I've had the great honor of talking with Raymond Pettibon, a major figure of American and contemporary art. We've met at his exhibition that opened that day at the Tel Aviv Museum of Art. So I've prepared some questions I would like to ask you, but feel free to take the conversation wherever you would like. So I myself being very much into comics and drawings, I've recently saw an interview with Robert Crumb, one of the underground comic artists of the 60s, who is also represented by the Zwirner Gallery, you work with. And the interview included a filming of Crumb in one of his openings, and he says, I don't get this art talk. I don't understand why I was chosen amongst so many cartoonists. And you kind of get the idea that he doesn't feel comfortable in this position. And seeing these exhibitions and also knowing your work, you come from another background, but you're also very much associated with underground and anarchic movements of the 70s and of the 80s. And I was curious about your position, and I mean, the work is very much reflective about what is being an artist, and you really feel it in the in this specific show of the Tel Aviv Museum.
Robert Crumb was a cultural icon, you know, of the, but his work is, you know, purely as an artist deserves, wherever you want to show it, whether it's galleries, museums, those rules don't apply anymore, or they shouldn't. In my case, I learned a lot from comics, visually anyway, you know, because that's what I, just as a, and drawing, you know, there's a etchings, and I never made any, although the first fanzine I did was also, there's a part of it that was a comic. I haven't done that much more with that, although it's a fascinating medium, you know. And the closest I get to it is with collage, I guess, although that's fairly recent in the long run. My art wasn't pressed to go into any, I just, like, you know, water falls downhill or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was gonna end up where it ends up, you know? I don't see my art as not belonging to the museum world, the art world, or the comics world, or the fanzine world, you know? There's no essential difference from them.
So when it comes to making an exhibition, I've seen in catalogs that you often do a mixture of wall paintings, of your drawings. Sometimes the drawings are shown directly on the wall, as if they came directly from your studio, like hot from the oven, which is not the case of this specific exhibition. Everything is framed with very like salon classical display. Is that something you're interested in? It's like all this recent curatorial discussions. Do you feel concerned, or it's a more spontaneous?
Well, in this case, you know, behind the scenes, I was bedridden until last night. I couldn't even walk to the door. I think, you know, this constellation of works, the way it's put up is fine. I don't have any complaints about it. But I think I'll do something on the wall. I mean, I don't know. I didn't hang the show, I didn't choose the works. Sometimes there is a theme to it, and additional commentary or making the drawings more part of a whole rather than random, which are not. I mean, I think
for me personally, one of the things that I'm attracted to in the work is this combination of, on one hand, a very how should I put it in English? Like, the drawings comes from etching and from cartoon, from comics, from caricatures, which is what you might say something which is popular, which is very approachable. And also the way you draw is very almost minimal in a way, but at the same time extremely conceptual with the text. Unlike a lot of the art we see today is trying to be political. And sometimes you really get the message, like against or for something. And your work has a very political aspect in it, and you can see it in the drawings on the war. But what's striking for me is the voice that resonates from the text is more of an angry prophet, or more poetical. And it doesn't give a message itself. So I was wondering if you had during your career an interest in the beginning of the conceptual art in the United States in the use of text, and also about this very something which is very poetical in a way, very literary. Of your work.
Yes. I'm not a big fan of political art, although I've engaged in it, you know, and the role of an artist has no value except for people actually love art and collectors, and they can be, there isn't necessary, you can be both, you know? And it's a very small world, and it's a barrage of media and Giuliani, for instance, who shut down the Brooklyn Museum, is still thriving, you know, under Trump. He's like a New York rat that can't be exterminated. And Trump has, you know, fake impressionists, you know, they claim they're real. And to get involved in that just helps the other side, really, you know. And there's other places where an art is part of a cultural tradition. It accentuates the culture where poets are and artists are held in acclaim rather than dismissed as being, you know, like the whatever you want to call it, the liberal elite or effete. So propaganda loses its value unless you're whether Stalin or Mao Zedong or Hitler or whatever, you know, you got to have every corner has to have your portrait on it. And you think there'd be a diminishing returns of that? Well, it's, if you can't have a kid, you got to propagate the image, you know, and just drum it into the public.
Figures like Lou Reham represent this kind of radical ambition and point of view on the world that I think people today are struggling to assume. And I was wondering, something I often ask artists who started their career in this lapse of time, what do you think of this nostalgia to those times in the work and in the politics?
Well, I lived through a lot of those times, so I know what it was like, and it wasn't like the nostalgia, you know? It was, you know, the baby boomer, you hear it from how the 50s was Leave It to Beaver and all the, you know, family shows and the reality of two cars in the garage, mother and father, two kids, growing up in suburbia. Well, you know, that was representing white America, okay? You know, if you're growing up black, no, it wasn't an ideal situation. There was still lynchings, there was Jim Crow, there was and there still is. Most of the discomfort in America now is of older white people who feel like they're being disenfranchised. And I mean, the people your age, you'd feel nostalgia for that, probably more for the 60s, because they think it was all peace and love, and idealism, and then we can change a world, you know, like one, just get everyone, once everyone drops acid once, or share your joint, that will enlighten minds, and we'll grow into a generation where everyone's enlightened. And by that time, we can vote in Timothy Leary or whoever, you know? Well, you know, we just went through election. The people who grew up as hippies, okay, they voted for Trump. You know, not Hillary's worse, whatever. But there's a nostalgia isn't what it was. I mean, the 60s was Nixon's Southern strategy, and George Wallace, you know, he was getting 15% of the poll or whatever. There's a reaction to it, which in the long run, it did more harm than good. I mean, the war didn't end until Ford, okay, Nixon was already out of office. And then, you know, most of the hippies were hippies, you know, just to protect their own asses, you know, from the draft. That was a real thing. I mean, there was over 500,000 GIs on the ground in Vietnam at one time, you know, between the ages of 18 and 22, mostly. I'm a realist. Okay. You know, it's like, count the bodies, count the homeless. This wishfulness for nostalgia, what is that? How's that going to help anyone, you know? Except as a veil of ignorance.
I think there's two themes that emerge in your work and are very, and also very present in this show. The first one is seen in several drawings. There's this one with the trophies, and there's another one on the other side, this small cartoon of the, I think it's the Morrison penis, something like that. It's kind of a criticism of celebrity or criticism of fame.
Oh.
And then the sportsman. And I tend to see them in a bit connected, but I wanted to hear from you about, mostly about these motifs of sport and then of the waves, which are related but more abstract.
Well, I don't... They're not being critical of fame or, you know, like in it, as if... As if I'm jealous or... I forget exactly what the Oscars... They go out into the real world or whatever. Well... The acting is the real world. I mean, if you've ever acted, it's not easy. And sports is it's what you can actually perform. There is nowadays every model, every actor, every actress is second, third generation, fourth generation. There's a lot of nepotism, okay? And there is in sports too as well, but ultimately you have to perform on the field. It's a meritocracy, you know, the ERA of the pitcher doesn't lie, the batting average, and whether you can hit the ball out of the park, that's not an argument. Sometimes the baseball ones, they have the numbers. Like when I used to have a lot of baseball cards, and the photo, or sometimes the painting of the player was on the front, and then on the back was a list of statistics, you know. And they were both part of it completed the person, you know. You could be Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays could be, you know, your pinup idol, whatever, you know, like Tab Hunter or Rock Hudson, whoever, like but then you flip the card over, and what really pops out is, wow, Mantle actually hit 365 with 54 home runs and whoever RBIs. So it's plus the visual abandonment of Mickey Mantle had a instantly distinguishable batting style, you know, where you could catch in one, you know, they're usually done as with a pause on a like a YouTube or a VCR or whatever. He hit from the left side of the play, the right side of the play. He was a switch hitter. Willie Mays had a distinguishable style. Everything he did, you know, the way he ran, the way he caught the ball, the way he hit. So that Babe Ruth, I mean, I've got fairly sparse means, you know, a rectangle of so big, and pen and ink or watercolor to depict these players who are, and to make them instantly recognizable.
Well, baseball itself is very it's a strong image of American culture.
Yes.
Which is something I think obvious. For me, it kind of felt a connection on the, as a figure of hero and as a figure of, because you have on the one hand the figure of the artist, the figure of the poet, and then the sportsman. So I kind of saw this kind of a jump or a link, which was surprising for me. I was also wondering, which may be a more formalistic question, but on some of the drawings you draw like a rectangle, giving the image a boundary and a specific limit, kind of and then sometimes you don't do it. Well, is it a spontaneous choice, or what does it give the image for you to have it limited as a vignette, or in this manner?
It's going to be a rectangle anyway, one way or another. Whether it's a frame, whether it's a cut of the paper, or whether you make a line through it. I don't see any here, but I used to, you know, because they would be improvised, and I'd run out of room, you know, so I would work outside the lines, because, you know, couldn't really predict how far I'd go with it, with the words. But other than that, there's usually, I hardly ever, I guess I used to more obviously, use a ruler or straight edge to make them, but I don't know the last time I did that. That must have been a long time ago. So if there are, I don't know, I mean, I can't draw a straight line well myself. Especially nowadays, it runs in the family, and benign tremors or Parkinson's syndrome, where everyone in my father's side of the family had it, and it got really bad, you know, later in life. So that's, I mean, if anyone's art depends on having a stability of line, you know, that goes for the words as well as the drawings. That's, if it keeps getting worse, then I'll have to either change the, I don't know, change my work.
Thank you very much for your time and
thank you.
Your words. It's, we appreciate it.
Good.
Thank you for listening to this podcast by Tohu Magazine. To discover more textual and visual content published by Tohu in Hebrew, Arabic, and English, please go to tohumagazine.com.